all stuff and stuff.
Sure.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for coming. I'm going to call the meeting to order. By way of introduction, my name is James Key Wallace. I'm the Executive Director of the New Hampshire Business Finance Authority, currently Interim Commissioner for the Department of Business and Economic Affairs. Newest, I think maybe tied for newest appointee to the SWIB. Happy to be here. I've been asked to be acting chair for the meeting, I think as a one-time favor or curse to the group, as it might be. So, A, it's nice to meet you, and what I'd like to do first is just go around and get things started. So, I have a script. So, some quick notes as we get started. This meeting is being recorded, so before you speak, please state your name so everyone on the record knows who's talking. Today's meeting is an official meeting of the board. It's open to the public, and it'll be run in a manner compliant with RSA 91A. Materials for the meeting and for the board and the public can be found by visiting the Department of Business and Economic Affairs website. So, we have a number of items to work through today. They're on the agenda with the supportive documents. It's been handed to the board electronically. Printed copies are available for anyone who needs them. So, Joe, if you would be so kind to lead us through roll call for the meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Alberts.
Here.
Jim Alden. Joseph Alexander. Stephanie Ashworth.
Here.
Kevin Avard. Rick Bartle. Alan Bolio.
Here.
Anya Brzezinski. Kenneth Clinton. Ryan Cluthier.
Here.
Mary Crowley.
Here.
Christine Dudley.
Here.
Tyler Eaton. Patrick Fall.
Here.
James Jerry. Cynthia Harrington. James Key Wallace.
Here.
Richard Lavers.
Here.
Shane Long.
Here.
Lori Ann Lundergan. Larry Major.
Here.
Ashok Patel. Tracy Pelton.
Here.
Jim Prue. Jay Rue. Richard Sala.
Here.
Gary Thomas. Cullen Tiernan.
Present.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Joe. So I would accept a motion to accept the minutes for consideration. Anyone would like to make the motion?
So moved.
Perfect. Thank you. Second. Any discussion or amendments to the minutes?
Could we get the names for the motion and the second?
Sorry. Yeah, I think Richard actually got his hand up first, and then I heard a couple seconds over here. I don't know who. Alan. Any discussion on the minutes? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Please have for the record the chair abstains, as I was not present at the meeting. So again, everyone, this meeting is open to the public, so we'd like to take a moment to see if anyone from the public would like to make a comment. If you would, please state your name. Not all at once. Anybody? Okay, great. All right, no one here from the public, so we will close that portion of the meeting. So we're going to start here with our informational items. It says here staff will not be presenting. Instead, they'll be answering your questions on the items at hand. So I'd like to turn it over to Joe. Would you please guide us through this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're item 2A on page 30 is a presentation from New Hampshire Job Corps. New Hampshire Job Corps is an important member of the New Hampshire Works system and an important workforce development partner here in the state of New Hampshire. Board member Stephanie Ashworth, who's also the center director at the Manchester location, is going to introduce herself, introduce Job Corps, and then we're going to go through first a moderated question and answer with some Job Corps participants, and then we're going to open it up to the board. So I'll kick it over to Stephanie.
Can you guys hear me? Yes. Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Stephanie. Nice to see most of you, and there's some new faces in the room, so to know you guys a little bit more. So as Joe said, I am the center director at the Manchester New Hampshire Job Corps Center. So I'm extremely passionate about the mission that we uphold, and a lot of people aren't 100% familiar with what we truly do and what the program entails. We've mostly been in the news the past year, unfortunately, with the funding crisis and the closure of Job Corps. So we are open. We are fully enrolling students. We are currently in a pretty positive place right now. We are still going through the court journey and the legal stuff. But we thought, what better way to truly learn about Job Corps than to hear it from some of our students? So I'll give you a little quick gist, but they're the important ones of the day. So for those of you guys who aren't super familiar with the program, we house and educate students between the ages of 16 and 24 years old. They need to enter the program between 16 and 24 years old. They can stay in the program for 2 years to complete a basic trade, and they get an additional third year if they want to extend that training into an advanced trade of some sort. There are, like, veterans can enter at any age, and certain disabilities qualify for any age. So we do have some students in their 30s, and actually recently I even have a student in their 40s. So the age thing can be waived depending on the reason and the circumstance. Enrollment, for the most part, our students coming in and our applicants have to either meet the economical requirement, and so that can be if they get food stamps, housing, anything like that automatically qualifies them for Job Corps, or any disability from ADHD and beyond automatically is a qualifier for Job Corps. So with those things being said, you know, our students have all special journeys and special lives, which you'll hear a little bit about, but it's truly an amazing opportunity. I tell every student coming in, you basically have a free scholarship to get a free education, and then we follow our students for about a year after they graduate, so they can spend that 2 to 3 years with us. Some finish in as quick as 4 months, depending on what they're there for. And then we follow them for a year to make sure that they have that great career path, whether that's college, military, or that trade. You know, they came for electrical, we want them to get that job in electrical. And then we also ensure that they have safe housing and all the extra things that they may need to have. So that's a quick Job Corps gist of what we do. And after you guys have any questions, I'm happy to answer some of them. But we'll hear mostly from the lovely students. So if you guys want to start and just introduce yourselves with your name, age, where you're from, and what trade you're doing. If you want to start, guys.
This one? Hi, my name is Jesse Miller. I am 18 years old, and I have my diploma from Laconia High School.
Awesome. Kirk, what trade are you doing?
I am doing facilities maintenance. I have just started.
Hello, my name is Alex Duarte. I'm 16 years old. I am not coming with a diploma. I need to get one in the next coming months. I'm currently in culinary.
That's perfect, yeah. You guys can stay seated if you want.
My name is Lucas Estrella. I'm 17 years old. I come from Nashua, New Hampshire. I'm in electrical currently. I got my high step from the way.
My name is Elijah Berker. I'm 19 years old. I came from Keene, New Hampshire. I came with my diploma from the high school, and I'm currently in electrical.
So just so you guys know, students can come in and get their high set diplomas or their high school diplomas. And some come in at 16, and some are coming in at 23, 24, still needing that. So it's offered to everybody along with math and reading classes to just enhance their skills further. And we also offer 9 trades, so hotel and lodging, culinary, certified medical assistant, medical administrative assistant, facility maintenance, electrical, security and protective services, and electronic engineer technician. If students are doing really well and they graduate a first trade, we can take students from all over the country in our advanced trade. We offer cybersecurity in our advanced trade, and we also offer robotics. Those are all through the Manchester Community College, and they get their associate's degrees with that. So it's another amazing opportunity for our students to gain. So if you guys don't mind, next, a little bit about your why you chose to come to Job Corps.
I chose to come to Job Corps because despite graduating high school with my diploma, and I've been working almost nonstop since I hit 14, I realized with how much I was making, no matter what job I had, I would not make enough to be able to afford a home.
And despite graduating high school, I was dealing with things at the time where I was not able to get the information that I needed that would be useful for me in my day-to-day life. So thankfully, now that I have gone into Job Corps, I have just recently been put into a math class. I have been tutoring with Mr. Milam, an amazing teacher so far. And if I do finish my facilities maintenance, I'd like to move into electrical. In the future, I do know there is someone who has graduated Job Corps that has gone to the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard. And in the future, I think that is something I may want to. In the future, although whoever Job Corps, they want you to stick with what your trade is, and I do plan to stick with my trade for as long as possible, I would like to go into higher education for law school. But it is a great opportunity, because most people, especially those at Job Corps, cannot afford to do that higher education. So it will give us jobs that we can use to then do what we want.
I'm Alex. I've come from Texas. I originally was not a great high school student with an average of maybe 2.5 GPA. High school wasn't really my thing. I didn't fit in with really anyone there. Coming to Job Corps was really my best option and probably one of my most best choices I've ever made. It's awesome people, great staff. I've met one of them, probably going to be my soon-to-be best friends in my life now. And, you know, culinary was a great option too because I need culinary schools, skills. Cooking is a very valuable skill to have. Not to mention, I like making good food for myself. I will try to stick with culinary when it comes to the arts of culinary in general for the rest of my life. I'm probably going to be going for a different trade like security or electrical in the soon to be future, 6 to 8 months probably, so I can have a much more, you know, I guess, enjoyable job. I'm not a big fan of working in fast food. Electrical would be more of a better choice for me since I have multiple people in my family that work in electrical. Nick Morazzi is one of them. He's more of someone to look up to. So.
Hi, I'm Lucas Cicerillo. The reason I came to Job Corps was due to financial burdens. I started working at the age of 14 for my grandfather's remodeling company to help out my mother. But the cost of staying there, the food, rent, I was just being a little bit more of a burden than so-called helpful. So Job Corps was a great opportunity to provide me with food, housing, shelter. I was able to properly eat, get proper education. I've gotten 5 certifications while being there. Ladder safety, scaffolding, OSHA 10, fall protection, MRM set. A lot of things that are going to help me in the future. Hopefully acquire a good job to be able to properly support my household, hopefully. A great teacher, Eric Fisher, does a great job of teaching that. That's about it.
My name's Elijah. So originally I came to Job Corps already with my diploma, my driver's license, kind of everything I've already needed. I only came really for the trade. I've always known I wanted to be an electrician since I was a little boy. My family's in it. I have a whole bunch of people who told me it's a good trade, good opportunity to get into it. So I graduated, and I've done tours Job Corps previously, and I kind of knew immediately I wanted to get into it to go. And I had a really good role model in my life who wanted me, he was a very high energy person, wanted me to kind of follow my dream, don't give up. As he says, life is never easy, it's one of those things that you do all the time. Honestly, there's never a straight path in life, you kind of got to take the mountains or the woods, trails, stuff like that. I ended up losing him February 20th of last year. It was a really hard time for me personally, kind of broke down. Honestly, I wasn't going to come to Job Corps because of it, because it was just a lot for me. I didn't know what to do at the time. And then I kind of ignored everything. I ignored his celebration of life. Like, I went, I just didn't talk to anyone. I kind of sat in the corner of the palace, to be honest with you. And then a few weeks ago, I kind of, after that, I went on to Facebook and I read his picture of for the first time. And I didn't want to, I didn't care enough to, but I know I needed to for myself personally. So then I read it, and there was, don't get me wrong, there was comments that were people saying, like, rest in peace, all that. But he made a huge impact on people, and it was a lot of inspirational things of saying how he was there. He saved many lives. He was a respiratory therapist, so he made a huge impact on multiple people. Goofy guy. You never heard anything bad about him. He was more the one that people laughed at when they went to Walmart or whatever, wherever he was. And then that moment, I kind of realized, like, he was my role model. I wanted to be that inspiration. Like, I want my friends to be like, Elijah, he's a good kid, you know what I mean? Like, he has a lot of potential. I want to be that impact that people, that I saw on him. So I ended up kind of overseeing everything and decided to go and kind of push through and took his advice. So life is not easy. It's never going to be. I'm guessing many of you guys probably know that. Because I'm still learning that. So it's a really good opportunity. I've gotten quite a bit of certs. RAM set. I already had my OSHA 10 when I got there. So I'm currently working on my OSHA 30 right now, which is a really good opportunity. My RAM set, my ladder safety, scaffold safety, HPIP. I'm working on my MCCER right now. But yeah, it's a good program. I've met a lot of good people. You hear a lot of different stories and kind of past that helps you kind of help people fit in a little bit more and kind of learn different perspectives and kind of help people move on from tough times, really. Staff are all great. But yeah, thank you.
Thank you. And if you guys want to just last kind of question, some of you already answered it, but a little bit of what you've learned, not necessarily just your potential, but what you've learned from the program and what you want to do afterwards.
So far, I am almost done with my HPIP, which is about insulation, and I believe I have gotten my RAM set. Pretty soon, I'm going to get started on my OSHA 30 as well. Because I am relatively new, I have not gotten as many certifications as the others might have, but I'm making my way up there.
Jess, how long have you been in the program?
Almost 90 days.
So she's hit the road running pretty well. Yeah. And then what do you want to do after? I think you talked a little.
Yeah, after here, the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard, for the past two seasons, I have been working at the Mount Washington Cruises, and I really hope that I can continue to work for them or go into a higher role because they do a lot for the community. And a lot of the jobs I worked before that, it was pretty isolated. I was a janitor at one point. I was working in the backs of kitchens. And I realized after working with so many people in such a social setting, I prefer it.
I'm Alex. What were the questions?
So, what you've earned or learned, so not necessarily, but if you've learned anything from the program and then what you want to do when you come to.
I've earned my food handler certification. I'm halfway through my allergens. I plan to get my manager certification so I can, at some point, maybe be a manager restaurant for a little bit. I'm a little over my 90-day mark.
And your kind of end goal.
My end goal?
Big. Dream big. What's your goal?
Own a food chain.
Hi, I'm Lucas Estrella. I have my credentials, just OSHA 10, which will be helpful to work with my grandfather on the weekend. Brought to modeling. We do modeling, worked with him for a couple summers. Does pretty good work. While I'm at Job Corps, it helps me build my body more physically for the job I'm hoping to get. And mental state. After Job Corps, I'm hoping to go into the National Guard for an interior electrician to build my skills up more. After that, possibly get into AEE, because my grandfather used to work there. Hopefully have a decent recommendation. Start off with that. Work my way up, hopefully become a journeyman. And that's about it. Thank you.
My name's Elijah. So, like I said, I've had most of my certs. The only one I don't have that I'm currently working on is my OSHA 30. And I've learned a lot of life skills, more say, here. Like kind of how to react with people in certain situations, how to kind of just live on your own, how to be independent, more say. Even though the staff do help with kind of helping us with that, it is still on us to learn how to be independent, even though they do help us and guide us in the right direction. I'm looking to, you know, I've been in the program for about a year, a little less, about a year. After the program, I hope to build up to my master's license and then maybe run my own business for electrical. But yeah.
So that's kind of the questions that we prepared for you guys, and you could hear a little bit from each of them about kind of their journey, their why, what they've done so far since being there, what they're looking to do. So whether it's apprenticeships, the military, a little bit of everything. The partnerships and the community support is vital for our students and their success, so we appreciate everybody around the table that helps with that. So without the support, they truly couldn't earn all of these credentials and do all of this stuff. So whether it's internships, work-based learning opportunities, or just we have a couple community members that come in and do like mock interviews with the students. So Elijah talked a little bit about it, but life skills and building their confidence, all of that is, the soft skills are just as important as the credentialing. So Job Corps really, really prides ourselves on that. So we want to make sure they're leaving here not just with all the certificates, but also they're feeling really good about themselves, they're confident in the work that they're going to go do, and that means their supervisor can be confident in the work that they're going to do. So do you guys have any questions for the students?
Can I ask a question? How did you guys find out about the Job Corps? Any of you, or all of you?
I found out about it through my school counselor. Thankfully, he was somebody who helped me a lot through my time there. I wasn't able to show up to high school because I had things going on at home. I had to talk to my parents' lawyers a lot. We had a lot of things coming in and out of the house, stuff like that. So despite being in higher classes, you can't show up to class, you're not going to get a grade. And then he pointed me in the direction of Job Corps, so finally I'm out of the house. I would have gone homeless if he did not recommend me this place. So now I'm not only getting an education, but I have somewhere to stay. If I wasn't sent to Job Corps by that individual, I don't know where I would be at.
My mother originally told me about it back in Texas when I thought, you know, I didn't have much to do left, but
did you relocated from Texas, right? Before
yes,
Job Corps?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that's how you ended up at Arsene.
Yeah, no, I live now in San Diego.
Perfect.
I'm Lucas Estrella. I heard through the program, my grandfather was talking about his uncle that went into the program and became a master electrician who now owns his own company. That got me interested in it, so I pursued it. And the program's great. It gave me more food than I could imagine, from going from one plate of food today to not being able to eat three. Went from the weight of 120 to 135, came back up to a more healthy weight now. Have the proper equipment to work out, build my body up more physically, so I'm no longer struggling on the jobs to lift the weight that I used to. And yeah.
So I found out from about Job Corps from my construction teacher. I did a lot better with hands-on, not really a big computer guy or whatnot. So I did a lot more hands-on type of stuff. He suggested it. Like I said earlier, I did a few tours and then kind of just knew I wanted to come here and build a future for myself, really.
Great. come on here, just make sure to say your name and your question, and then we'll go over to Mike after yours.
Thank you. So, Colin Tiernan, I'm a political director for the State Employees Union, so I kind of wanted to do something similar and ask you all just whether you've ever thought of working for the state of New Hampshire, and if you thought of unions. I know you mentioned Portsmouth Naval Yard. And then also just want to give you guys kudos, because I think you guys, what you're doing is amazing, and your ability to articulate yourselves and present is very adult, and certainly kudos to the National Guard too. But yeah, just curious, state employment and unions.
Portsmouth Naval Shipyard, honestly, I don't know as many details about it yet. because I did meet with that kid who was brought into the program once. But sorry, I can't breathe in my nose today. It's been
no worries.
So yes, Portsmouth Naval Shipyard, and I believe Elijah is interested in that as well. It's
yes.
A similar union type based. And before the meeting started, we were actually chatting about the benefits that you would get from a state job and things like that, and how important that is to the state. So.
And in the future, you know, I did say I'd like to be a lawyer. That's probably not anytime soon. But honestly, anything legal that could go through the state is something I've always been interested in. So, who knows? I hope to meet more people through Job Corps who can help me reach these goals.
My name is Alex. I'm looking for people that would tell me what kind of state employments I'm looking for, like for culinary arts and stuff. I don't think I'm going to join a union. I don't see the appointment for culinary. But, you know, looking for anyone that would definitely hire a 16-year-old for, you know, that's a corner.
I'm Lucas Estrella. Planning on working for the government or a union, hopefully when I get older, in electrical or security, preferably. It would be beneficial.
So I have debated on doing the Naval Shipyard. Honestly, I don't know where I want to go in the sense of like work-wise. Like I know I want to be an electrician, but I don't know exactly what I want to do yet. There's different, like you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. Someone could offer you a job offer that is better than the Naval Shipyard or really anything. Like you never know what doors are open. But I know I do want to do electrician at some point, just don't really know in what roof yet.
One of our big goals is expanding our apprenticeship opportunities for our students. So that's kind of a goal for 2026 for us at New Hampshire.
Do you mean just state unions or like unions in general?
Unions in general, yeah.
Because I feel like it would be awesome for somewhere at Job Corps for them to teach us more about unions. Because I know personally people in my family, a lot of them work through UPS and go through Teamsters. So I've been desperately searching for a job that would have a good union, but me personally, I don't know all the details about it.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Great, thank you.
We're going to work on getting you that.
Perfect.
Sorry,
that's great. Mike, I think you had a question.
Mike Robertson with Wire Technologies. Are there two different programs in electrical, one sort of the journeyman's perk, where it's residential and maybe commercial? Wiring and all that, and then is there an industrial part of it too?
So they do mostly, so the basic electrical trade at our center is mostly residential. They'll dabble into the industrial a little bit, and then they can go on to an advanced trade at another center where they do more of the, it can be industrial focus, or there's a couple different avenues in electrical. And then we also order electronic engineer technicians, so more the soldering and the fixing of electrical components.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Did I answer that?
That makes sense, yeah. If they go for the master's license and all that, does the job corps sponsor that and help that? Or
so
that
that's, we don't sponsor, so that's kind of our, where the apprenticeship struggle is finding the people willing to sponsor is really where we struggle. So if anybody knows anybody out there that's willing to sponsor apprenticeships, that's where we are really, we keep kind of getting halted. Doug Cullen, who's the works with the Timbers Association, the Owners Association, he's been really helpful in trying to help us with the apprenticeship buildup, which would help them eventually get up towards the journeyman and then eventually keep going. Yeah, so it's really the opportunities that arise for them that would help them get there.
Great, thank you. I think Tracy and then Commissioner Labors, I believe, had a question.
Tracy Pelton with Procon. We are the largest designer and builder in the state. Thank you for being here and sharing your stories, and congratulations on what you're accomplishing at Job Corps. It's amazing. We do work with Bring Back the Trades, which is a nonprofit organization that hands out scholarships to students your ages to help you get your journeymen and licenses. And we also are partnered with Grit to Grow and the Bring Back the Trades Task Force, and we're hosting a summit June 23rd through 24th that I'll give you all the details on. At the Inn at Mills Falls, and we will have a lot of job opportunities there and apprenticeship opportunities. So I would love to partner with you to get that information out to the students and through our, you know, avenues to get that information out. because we are going to have a lot of companies that have opportunities for apprenticeships and job, you know, internships and different ways for you to start in the in your career. So I just wanted to thank you for being here, for sharing your stories, and just to share that with you. There are lots of companies that are looking for young talent who are driven and motivated and want to do excellent work. And so to know that you came through the Job Corps and that you have that drive, you will get hired right away.
Thank you.
Great. Commissioner Labors, and then can't quite read it down there. Patrick, I think, is it?
Patrick
Fall. Patrick, Mr. Fall, thank you.
Hey, everybody, thank you for your willingness to come here today and sharing your stories and all the, you know, quite a bit of ambition over there at that table, which is impressive. So I'm Rich Labors. I should be better at identifying myself considering how good all of you are at it each time you speak. So I'm with one of the state agencies that partners in delivering all of the workforce-related programs with training and education opportunities. So two relatively quick questions. One, have you guys had an opportunity to go over to the New Hampshire Works office yet in Manchester? No? Okay, so we'll be getting you over there, and you'll be able to learn more about some of the other supports and opportunities that can kind of facilitate your continued growth with different training opportunities, different employment opportunities. So we'll be getting you guys over there. We're on Hanover Street in Manchester. And then I know, Jessica, you've kind of indicated where you're hoping to get to with the shipyard. But just generally, all of you, what are your plans in terms of staying in New Hampshire? Are you hoping to remain in New Hampshire? And how do you see that future?
I plan on staying in New Hampshire for most of my life. Maybe for school later on, I can go to Massachusetts, but I do plan to come back.
I plan to stay in New Hampshire since I lived in Texas for so long, so I'd like a change of plan.
I'm Lucas Estrella. I plan on going to Oklahoma State University to get my master's, but I plan on living in New Hampshire as my family's lived here for hundreds of years.
I also do plan to stay in New Hampshire.
Future workforce.
That's where we're going.
Perfect. Thank you. Patrick.
Patrick Fall, local 131, plumbers and firefighters. I can speak to the sponsorship, if you will, of apprentices in my trade, where when I came in, go to Union Hall, sign up, get put on the list to be one of the candidates for our apprenticeship, and you don't pay for school. You come in and you start your training and they put you to work. So you get paid and you go to school 2 nights a week. 3 hours a night, 2 nights a week. And for us, it's a 5-year apprenticeship. I don't know the specifics of the IBEW, which is the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. assuming slightly that it's quite similar. You don't pay up front to go to school. You enter there, you put yourself on their list, you start their training, you get put to work as an apprentice, and depending upon your level of training up front, you are all getting your OSHA 10. That's a requirement. You have that already. They will see that as a good thing. And actual electrical training and experience is also important. I would say don't limit yourself to electrical. There's electrical in other fields as well, union and not. And I'm not strictly a union person. I support all trades, union and not. We need each other to be strong. Okay? Both sides need to be strong. So I'm not trying to take one down and build us up. I can just speak about ours. So throughout your training, you are building to get your journeyman's license and then master's license if that's what you want. Now, certain companies, they may pay you to get those licenses, but typically you're paying out of pocket to get the license and all that. However, all the experience along the way is paid for up front through the union's dues. And then what happens after that is you work for X amount of hours in the field field and work for a competitor, if you will, doing the same work, then they may ask for however many years that you did work in that trade for the union, they might ask for that scholarship back. And it's not any money's money, so nobody wants to be shelling out extra money. But it's not as expensive as you would think. So, anyway, thank you for your time. I appreciate y'all putting the effort into what you're doing.
Great. Thank you. I think we have time for one more question, and then we need to move on. I don't know who had it first, Richard or Shane here. And then I would encourage you to definitely speak with Stephanie if there's other questions.
Yes. I'll be here.
Not a question, it's really a comment. So first, I just want to tell you, I don't know you personally, but I'm proud of the fact that you're sitting here talking to us about your experience. And I just want to really quick tell you, each one of you talked about having a vision for your life, and you talked about a why. When I was 13, I was removed from my home by the state of New York. I lived in a boys' home for many years, and I lived on the street. Sometimes I was lucky I could stay at a friend's house, but I lived on the street until I was 17 years old. And I joined a different corps, I joined the Marine Corps, and it changed my life. But what got me there was I had a vision for my life, and I held on to it, and I had a why. And my why was I just wanted to be a good role model for my little brother. I had a great career in the Marine Corps. I went on to go to law school. My younger brother and I both retired from the Marine Corps. We live in the same town I do here in New Hampshire. And now I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Education. So as you're going through this and you hit obstacles along the way, you can hold on to those two things, your vision and your why, you will get there. So congratulations to each of you for taking the time to put effort into your own success.
Great. Thank you. On that note, let's give a hand for our presenters. All right. Thank you all so much. And my apologies, Shane, but I encourage you to reach out.
That was a good ending.
Yeah. Perfect. So, so thank you all very much. We're now going to proceed with the remainder of our informational items. I'd like to turn it back over to Joe to guide us through that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Joe Dorian. We're on page 31 of the packet, item 2B, rapid response update, and that is Nick Massey.
Nick Massey, Workforce Development Administrator. I'm here to report on the status of the So since our last update, which was October 14th of 2025, we've had 13 rapid response activities. That's been a decrease from the ones we had prior time period. We had 17 prior to that for the year. But we've had an increase in effective employees. So during the last session, we had 364 people were affected. This time we had 400 a day. That's been due to the two large manufacturing employers who decided to transfer those jobs out of New Hampshire. One was ICU Medical, which is the Smith Medical out of Keene. The other was Anheuser-Busch out of Merrimack. So between those two companies, there were 365 people. For both of those companies, we had multiple sessions. Both companies were running three shifts. One of them, we were there at 6 o'clock in the morning to do rapid response because that's when the third shift got off. So what else did we do here? So not only did we provide three rapid responses to both companies, we were able to do a separate Q&A session so people could address personal questions they would have either about their employment, about healthcare, about what the process is, getting a resume. With Anheuser-Busch, we set up a separate day just for resumes where we had employment security was there, we were there, and we would sit down with anybody who wanted to work on their resume. And Anheuser-Busch was good about giving them a plan, so they had been able to scalpel the resume to start with. And also with both companies, we were able to work in, again, with employment security. I have nothing but good things to say about it. We were able to set up job fairs for both companies on site. So on a more positive note, we were able to avoid layoffs at 3M of Laconia. They had 39 employees who were able to go to the work share program. So they went down to kind of reduced hours for, I think it was like 3 months. And then they were back to work full-time in January. So the only two industries that were really affected so far during this time period have been the manufacturing and healthcare. With 358 out of the 408 layoffs occurring in manufacturing, and that was in Hillsborough and in Cheshire County, so really concentrated during the layoffs so far. That's pretty much it for the report. Does anybody have any questions?
Go ahead.
Colin Tiernan. So I'm just curious if you could, I think what I read, Anheuser-Busch was offering the employees jobs at other facilities throughout the country.
Yes, they closed the facility in California, they sold the one in Newark, and they closed the one here. And some of the employees were moving to St. Louis, but most of them decided to not, because they've been there for 20 years, union jobs, or their family have been here for a long time, just to up and it's not been there. So it's more of the management that decided to move to St. Louis.
And then with the ones that were, the people who are staying here, could you expand a little bit more what the conversations were like? Do you feel like people were getting connected?
Well, most of the, there were 19 companies that came to the job fair, and most of them were manufacturing. BAE was there, the can manufacturer was there, post office was there. And so there was a good turnout on that one. So it's kind of like a lot of the local manufacturers, particularly knowing that we had high quality employees there for a number of years.
Thank you.
Commissioner Labors.
Nick, the attendance at the rapid response events, could you just go over, is that, this was about 90% with the affected employees, is that high or is that about normal?
I think we had a good turnout for both of them. I think we had 146 people, we had about 90 at ICU Medical, and about the same at Anheuser-Busch. A lot of times it depends upon how HR spins it. We've had some companies that say it's mandatory, and so we do get hired. But we never say that it's mandatory that the employees attend.
Well, I think we all know Rapid Response does a fantastic job. It's a team effort, so thank you to everybody involved, and I hope that you have a terribly slow 2026. So. Joe.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Joe Dorian. We're going to pass it over to Melissa Carter for item 2C, which is on page 32, for a fiscal update.
Are there any questions?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Joe Dorian. We're going to go to page 36, which is item 2D, a program performance update, and passing it over to Lisa Gerard.
So we all have to be aware of each of the title program's performance because we're all kind of in the same boat. So if one of us fails, we're all held accountable. And the money that gets sanctioned is actually our REOA Title I Governor Reserve Fund. So in all actuality, the Title I programs really get hit if the other programs don't respond, so don't perform. So we changed the format so that we can start giving the board, as well as the consortium, a bigger picture. Instead of just the Title I programs, we're now including all the other titles. We created a work group within the state from all of the different titles, and we meet on a regular basis to go over performance measures and where we're at the end of quarters. So the information is being gathered and then disseminated to the managers of programs and the directors of the department. So I wanted to point out the difference in kind of the formatting. The chart that is on page 37, you'll notice that all of the titles run across the top. They have a negotiated column. That's our negotiated performance measures that we negotiate every 2 years with, for us, it's the Department of Labor, Department of Education, for the other titles. So you'll see the negotiated goals for the year, and then you'll see the actual program 25 quarter once. We color code the performance measure to tell us whether or not we are meeting or exceeding, and that is if we've met that goal head on or exceeded it, it gets a green color. The yellow is if we're meeting 90 to 99% of the goal, and the red is we're falling below that performance, that negotiated performance goal. You will see that there is red in our chart, but we are very early in this program year. This is only quarter one. We usually, especially with measurable skill gains, that is a year-long performance measure, and you will not going to see it out of the red until probably the fourth quarter when we finally are done the year. The other ones that might be in red, we're all aware of the red. We work towards trying to bring those into at least yellow or green. But at the end of every program year, everything goes through a statistical adjustment model. So the departments that we work with will run it through this. It's a lot of math. I have no understanding of it. But they take into consideration our unemployment rates, our demographics, our all kinds of different data. And a lot of times that can make or break. If we're in yellow at the end, it will bring us into the green. So it's kind of this ever-moving thing that we all monitor. So right now, we're doing really well across the titles, even though we have some red, because the way that it gets reported, it's always changing quarter two, quarter four, so we just kind of have to see who's in the demographic and where we can make some adjustments. For Title I, I will tell you that the two measures that we can really make a difference in are credentials and measurable skill gains, and we have a contract with a company. It's actually, this is our third year, with FutureWorks BI, and they take our data from that we submit to the Department of Labor, and they make it into a dashboard that we can easily look at our performance on a daily basis. We update the system every month, so it's pretty accurate, and we can run reports that show us who's in the measure and who didn't get a credential or who didn't get a measurable skill gain. We can go back to those cases individually and start looking. Did we miss something? Is there a problem with the case management where there is a certificate but we just failed to enter it? So with those tools and with the reporting in our case management system, we try to keep a really close handle on how we're doing at any given time. I think that's it. But if you have any questions, feel free to throw them at me.
Stephanie Asher for the record. More of a comment, but even though Job Corps has been a WIOA program, we haven't, our report cards that we get on a monthly and annual basis have not always followed this, which we've been arguing for a long time that it should. So It was supposed to kick off this year, but with the closure of Job Corps that was announced, it's been postponed. But starting July, we will have these exact same measures, which I think will kind of just change our outlook and push those goals. But in the credentialing itself, this past year, we had one of the largest improvements in the country. So I do, we will now be 100% focused on a lot of the same things, which is great.
Lisa Gerard, just a comment. And we can add Job Corps to our group and get you in with our performance measures as well. And anything that we can do, because we've been doing this for multiple years, so especially around the negotiation of your goals and things like that, please feel free to reach out.
Wonderful.
Colin Tiernan, thank you for this. I'm curious if you could just expand a little bit on the median earnings. What all those numbers kind of entail and how you get them.
Sure. So there is on the following pages some descriptions of each of the different measures, but for median wages, that's second quarter after exit, and the way that we get that is through an MOU with New Hampshire Employment Security, and what happens is basically our file goes through a wage match system. And it's pulling the median wages for the individuals that exited 2 quarters ago. So we get a median wage. And really, we say that there's some measures you really can't do anything about. Median wages is either going to be there or not. We can either meet it or not. It's based on somebody's wages. So we don't see the data. It's basically an exchange of files, and then it comes back into our. We call it the PERL. It's our reporting to the Department of Labor. But that's what the median wages are. It's tied to the exit, the second quarter exit.
Thank you. Joe. Sure. Okay. Oh, was there a question down there I missed? Sorry.
No. Oh, okay.
Okay.
I don't go to auction.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item 2E, the success stories are found on page 43. Because I know we have a few new board members here, we always include in the board packet some success stories from current WIOA participants. So I'm happy to take any questions that you might have. And if you have particularly tough questions, I might ask some of the team to help me. So any questions?
Seeing none.
I'm off the hook. So we're going to jump to page 58. Again, for the record, Joe Dorian. Give everybody an opportunity to flip. But please do take a look at the success stories. That's our why. You know, this is why we do what we do. It's not all about spreadsheets and numbers and stuff. We have some really great stories in there of folks getting help. So item 2F is just a recap of the New Hampshire Works Conference. We had a few board members there, which was awesome. So thank you all for your support. The board has been very supportive over the past few years. This was our second annual conference. We're going to do it again. We're going to go for the triple crown. And we're going to be starting that planning in the next few weeks. So we're going to add that to the list of things to do. But we put together a conference. We came in under budget. We had 185 attendees. We had volunteers from all the different agencies helping us the day of. The event venue was donated by NHTI, Community College System, so thank you. The food and the opening speaker was donated by CAPHR. We had staff from NHES, Adult Ed, VR, CAPHR, all the partners. I know I'm forgetting folks, forgive me, but we had everybody there helping. It was great. It's awesome that we're investing in professional development. We came in, I think the board gave us, I think, a $5,000 budget. We came in under budget. We spent $243.55, and that was for printing and whatnot. But also, too, during that, we were able to, we have awards as well. And so it's great to be able to acknowledge folks, and we also acknowledged Commissioner Kapatis, who had just announced his retirement, I think a day or two prior, and also Donnelly Lozo from CAP-HR. So it was an emotional afternoon, but a great and a great event. But we put together an after conference survey to gain some insight on where we can improve. And so on page 59 and 60, I took just the first few questions from that. I didn't want to, and we can certainly provide you the whole data that we, I think it was about 12 or 13 questions, something like that. But I mean, you know, I was hoping for 5 stars, like my Uber rating, but you know, we have 4.39, which is pretty darn good. If you look, I mean, we had 185 attendees. We had about 50% participation, 48% actually, at exactly 48%. And that's pretty darn good for a survey. You know, we had a few folks that didn't seem to love it at the bottom, but that's okay. We respond well to feedback. But some highlights, what did they like most about the event? The opening plenary was a huge favorite. It was like a three-way tie: opening plenary, the presentations, and the networking. And the one thing that they liked least was the food.
Facility. It looks like the facility. Yeah,
it? Yeah. And the facility is
it's
in
a
there.
Free facility.
I know.
And for food, this is Chairman Key Wallace. I believe we met a gentleman this morning named Alex. maybe we should ask him for his thoughts.
But it was, you know, the feedback is what it is, right? And so we're going to look to hosting the next year's. Happy to take any questions.
Colin Kiernan. When do you think we'll be next year?
So we are, I'm looking at my good friend and colleague, Chris Dudley, you know, from the community college system. So we were going to chat at some point about booking out because, you know, although, you know, there are potentially other options, NHTI is centrally located. Everything is, of course, handicap accessible, a little easier for the North Country folks coming from East. It's just more centrally located, also free. We love that. You know, we're going to take a look at, you know, putting things together very soon. Did I answer your question? I'm sorry.
I think you did the where and not the when.
When? Oh, thank you. I'm so sorry.
Okay. I found that interesting.
My coffee is wearing off. I do apologize, sir. So the we're looking in October primarily. We're probably going to keep it to that October time because when we get into November, we start having to deal with snow. But so probably October would be our goal. And a Friday, because Fridays are, we have to avoid governor and council. We have to avoid, because, you know, we want directors to be there, so we don't want, like, a GNC meeting to prohibit people from coming. And then we try to avoid days when the legislature might be in session. I understand it's the fall, but you never know, that sort of thing.
Thank you.
Stephanie, for the record, we will happily, our new culinary chef is a pastry chef, so we'll bring desserts if needed.
The sweet taste of 5 stars.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Go ahead. Thank you. Sorry that I lost my train of thought.
No,
sorry.
5-star man.
Yeah. So we're going to go to page 61. Again, Joe Dorian, 2H. So our partners at New Hampshire Employment Security through the Economic Labor Market Information Bureau, ELMI. They are always very kind. They do a lot of really great. They have you all have amazing data, and I love looking at your website. But we get a report annually about the economic impact of WIOA funds here in New Hampshire, and the full report is after the abridged version on page 61 that you can read it, so you understand that I'm not making things up. The great news is for every dollar we spend, we get $3 of economic activity output in the state. So, you know, for every dollar we spend on, from WIOA, $3 of economic activity, which is pretty not good. Pretty darn good, I should say. Also, that should be in the report. It details that that should be the minimum. We actually think the impact is more, but we just don't have the ability to track when folks leave Medicaid or welfare or other government programs because they've gotten gainful employment through our assistance, that sort of thing. And that's we owe across the board, so the other partners at NHES, Department of Ed, and whatnot. So pretty darn good, $3 of return for every $1 spent.
So this is Chairman Kiwala's joke. Would it be fair to assume that if we could track some of those other metrics, you know, of removing from kind of publicly funded programs, the return on investment would only grow?
Correct. Yes.
Right.
Yes. Very much so.
Great. Probably substantially.
Yes. Yes. Right.
Thank you. Okay.
This is Lisa Gerard. I just wanted to add one more thing about that. It also doesn't include any of the economic kind of ripple effect that you would have with somebody whose family has been on benefits their entire, generationally. And if the individual then comes into the workforce, that change that does to the family dynamics, that is hard to quantify. So there's that other piece, not just leaving the benefits and not utilizing them, but what does the benefits do for that entire family and or social network? Somebody joins the workforce, and you see some of our training.
Certainly, again, Joe Dorian, it's a very conservative estimate. Very, which. Mr. Chairman?
Perfect.
Should Great. I continue or?
Yes, I think that concludes the informational items portion of the meeting. So thank you all for your attention and some great stories, particularly from Job Corps. So thank you, Stephanie, for bringing those young folks in. So now we will move on to the board motion and discussion portion of the meeting. I again will turn to my right to Joe Dorian. Thank you.
Item 3A is just to see if there's any general discussion or votes that need to be taken thus far. And then if we're okay, Mr. Chairman, can we jump to item 3C, which is the one-stop certification?
Please.
Item 3C on page 67 is the one-stop operator certification, and Lisa Gerard will present this item.
Lisa Gerard, for the record. The one-stop operator certification is a statutory requirement under WIOA. That is one of the many things that we get tasked with statutorily, and that kind of falls on the Office of Workforce Opportunity. Because it's connected to the SWIB, we are your staff support, so it kind of comes down to us to take care of it. But the one-stop operator certification is a process that needs to happen every 3 years. The last time that we did this was in 2023. It was the first time that this staff, the OO staff, had done a one-stop certification. The previous time was during COVID, so it was actually a virtual one-stop certification. And it was prior to all of this staff joining the team. So at that time, we just took the policy that was already there and ran with it. But what we determined was the policy was very vague. It did not outline who was supposed to do what. It didn't provide us with tools. It was very, very vague in what we were looking for and what we should be doing. So because the certification is up June 30th, we decided it would be a good opportunity to look at that policy and really kind of draft a brand new policy. This was done, obviously, with New Hampshire Employment Security's input because the setup in the state of New Hampshire is very different than any other state. We run the one-stop centers as a consortium, but New Hampshire Employment Security owns the buildings, so they're essentially the one-stop operator. So we worked with NHES to kind of make sure that the policy would be effective for not only what we need to do for the SWIB to provide you with the reports and the documentation after we go out, but also worked with NHES to make sure that the amount of things that we're all going to have to do wasn't too burdensome, but yet allowed us to have all the information that we need to draft the reports for the SWIB. So we created a new policy and a new, a whole bunch of new forms, checklists, documents, and really just thought about it from beginning to end. So the old policy is on page 70. So the old policy starts on page 70. And then the draft of the new policy begins. Hold on one second. Let me make sure. So the new policy begins on 70. I apologize. The new policy itself starts on 70. And then, Yeah, it's all together. So the draft is there, and then you have the tools as well in the graph. So what we were trying to do is really make it outline whose responsibility, what documents we would be asking for, and the process when we went out to the New Hampshire Works office. You'll also see, starting on page 68, is our schedule. The schedule starts in March, 2 days after the state plan is due. The state plan is due on March 3rd. This starts on March 5th. So again, the statutory requirements that we have to commit and complete really do drive a lot of the work that we have to do, whether we want to or not. But it will be a busy few months for the OO team. It is a very aggressive schedule because we need to get through the entire state, all 12 New Hampshire Works locations, in time to draft individual reports to then submit a grand report to you all by June, the June meeting, because you will have to basically vote on whether or not the one-stop centers can be certified again for 3 years. So it is very aggressive. It puts a bunch of the team on the road for most of March, and then the rest of the team will be doing what we call desk reviews, which is reviewing documentation without having to go out to the field. It's documents, contracts, reviewing all different things that they can review without having to leave the office. So the whole team, even except for Melissa Carter, because she's the money person, all the rest of us will be involved in this process. Again, 2 days after the state plan is due into the portal, that is not working currently with the government shutdown. So we have no idea when we'll be able to enter state plan into the portal. So again, statutory requirements that we have to do. So we hope that the draft that we've provided you is satisfactory to the SWIB. It is, you all get to vote on the policy as well as the certification. So I'm happy to answer any questions about the policy, about the process, about anything having to do with this item.
Are there any questions? Please.
I guess there's some key changes.
It's basically a brand new policy. We did not keep pretty much anything from the original policy. But we revamped the entire thing. We changed basically everything. It went from a couple-page document to it is now we're calling it an application pack. packet where we're building an entire packet of documentation to show that we have checked everything for effectiveness, for cost effectiveness, for basically anything that statutorily we're supposed to be looking for. Where that was missing before, it was a vague policy that we would do this process, but it wasn't very detailed or outlined. So when we did it 3 years ago, the team, we kind of floundered a bit to what were we looking for, what were we supposed to be doing, what was the intent, and the why. Again, like, why are we doing this, and what are we looking for? So we really completely revamped it.
And so we'll make communication with the Fed easier?
This really won't affect any kind of communication with Department of Labor. It is a requirement, but when we undergo our audit, they will be looking at our policy. So hopefully they will like the changes that we've made, but they will also look at the certification. But it's a requirement, but they're kind of hands-off on it. It really comes down to the partners, the New Hampshire Works partners. So they will have a voice in it. So vocational rehabilitation, even if they're not in that location, will be wanting to talk to staff from all the different partners to get input as to that local office. We'll be talking to staff of the type of the WEOL programming to get their input as well. You know, what's working, what's not working, what do you like? Can we change anything? Can we, you know, fix processes or make things leaner? Anything like that. That's our purpose for this, as well as to make sure that the one-stop operator is providing everything that they are mandated to provide under the bill, which we kind of know they are because there are New Hampshire Employment Security. But we go through the process, and last time we did find a couple things. It was really minor, vinyl details on the door, and that's really kind of where, and professional development, that's where a huge push for professional development came from, was our one-stop certification 3 years ago. It was the theme when we talked to the ground staff. They didn't feel like they had enough. So we really have been pushing that with our lunch and learns. We started doing WEOA Title I training. Just the conference, those are the things that we've implemented from that certification 3 years ago.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Not Alan Bolio for the record. Not a question, just a compliment. I read through this and was struck by how complete and well-structured this is. So kudos to you and your team.
Thank you, sir.
Hear, hear. Do we need a vote on this item?
We do, Mr. Chairman.
Great. So I would accept a motion, if anyone would like to make it, to accept the draft policy as the new policy going forward as proposed.
So moved. Tracy Belton.
Tracy.
Second.
Mike Albert, second. Any discussion?
Tracy Belton, it sounds like this is very productive. Maybe on the years that you're not going physically out in a month to all 12 locations, you can do surveys in between to say, give us feedback, how can we improve, instead of waiting every 3 years?
Lisa Gerard, so there is a mechanism now in the new policy that on the off years, the New Hampshire Works office manager, we have some questions in there, and they are to draft an annual narrative on the off years to tell us what's going well, what are they working on, where they need help. We look at their numbers. So we did build in something to look at the off years, as you said, so that if there is something that's coming up, we are addressing it each and every year, and we only have to actually physically go out once every 3 years. But we do have a new mechanism in the new policy.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
Great. Further discussion? All those in favor as proposed?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Hearing none, chair votes aye. Motion passes. Congratulations. A lot of work. Well done. Well done. Great. Joe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Joe Dorian. And I do feel bad for Lisa and Jess, who are going to be subject to my carpool karaoke yet again.
That sounds funny.
We'll see if they're here in at the June meeting. So we're going to jump to page 85, which is item 3D, which is one of my favorite things to talk about, which is the New Hampshire Combined State Plan. So where do we begin? And I see my colleague and friend Chris Dudley laughing at me a little bit, which is not unheard of. The government is currently at this point shut down. I'm not sure if it has opened up. Why I mention that is because we don't have access to the portal. Nobody does, actually. So we're in with 50 states and the territories. In order to upload this document, we are not able to even ask for the credentials. So because everybody is currently furloughed, but also if the government was open, they'd likely be unable to provide us those credentials because the people that ran the portal were either let go or retired. So we're unclear as to when we will get the opportunity to put in to the portal the New Hampshire state plan because it is due by March 3rd. The feds have said, however, that we can request for an extension up until April 30th if we essentially can't handle it. Putting it in the laps of the states to say if we can't make that deadline, we can always ask them to give an extension. Our intent is to still try to make the March 3rd deadline for multiple reasons. One, we have the one-stop certification. Two, we've built our work plan for the year to accommodate that. Not to say that we're not flexible, but we also want to get it done. And with this process, if and when we get approval from the board, which we'll talk about in a moment, I just wanted to kind of provide this little narrative prior. If the board approves what we've put together, it's going to take about 2 to 2.5 weeks and to enter it into said portal with the partners. That's obviously getting very close to that March 3rd deadline. Once it's in the portal, the feds have an opportunity then to go and review everything that we've put in and provide feedback. And we're unclear as to how much scrutiny we will be getting. And I mention that because we were receiving guidance on what to do with the state plan as late as last Monday, including a deadline to get a letter in to give me authority from the governor of New Hampshire to input the plan. The deadline was Monday. The government was closed Monday, but we got in early. We got in Thursday afternoon, so we'd like to be ahead of time. So I want to throw out all these challenges because we've had a lot of challenges up until this point, but they continue to be there's continued to be more and more challenges, which are great character building activities, but we're working through it. So we sent out to you all the state plan. We got it from partners. We worked very well getting that all together. We don't have printed copies. However, we do have a projector. We have, and Lisa's volunteered to drive on if we have any specific issues or deficiencies that you've identified as a board. We did not print out copies because they are about 400 pages a pop, which would be an administrative burden, and I think it might have killed our printer. We have a draft. We have on page 86, we have an action, a staff recommendation, and a draft motion. This is something, too, I will also mention that we're going to have to do in 2 years. We're going to have to revisit this and do a whole new complete plan. The motion that we put forward gives staff the latitude to ensure full compliance with the U.S. Department of Labor guidance requirements and identified deficiencies. Every time we put this into the portal and submit it, it always gets kicked back. Nobody gets it on the first go around. Last time we had, I think, the easiest of all time. We worked with a consultant. They said it was amazing. We had minor deficiencies. I think they were nitpicking, but we got it done. in way ahead of time, and it was done. They may kick it back more this time because they are still providing guidance, again, as late as last Monday. Not this past Monday, but the Monday prior. So we put this motion together to not burden the board with then having to do an emergency meeting. Any changes is based on statute and what they are requiring us to do, so it's not editorializing, it's just meeting the obligations that are set forth by statute. So I'm sorry, I feel like I've talked a lot at you. This is one of my least favorite things to talk about. I can't wait till after the June meeting when this is all done, and we're going to take a break from talking about it for at least a year.
Lisa Gerard, just for the record, just to add a couple of things about the timeline. The plan has to be approved by the entities, which are all the departments at the federal level, by June 30th. So if we were to push it back and take the April deadline, not only is it going to interfere with our one-stop certification, but we will have less time to do any of the revisions that they're going to require. So that's why we're still sitting with that March 3rd deadline, and that will give us time, and hopefully we'll be one of the states that are in early so that we can get our revisions back early if other states take advantage of the extension. We might be able to kind of get in there and get our revisions so that we can move quicker. It has to be in place under legislation. So they can approve the plan conditionally, and they can approve it outright. So that's, I just wanted to mention that as well.
Great. So this is Chairman Key Wallace. So just to make sure we all understand what's being asked for, you all are going to hopefully get your credentials soon. You're asking for the board to approve the revisions to the state plan as presented in the materials and authorize staff to make any changes and further adjustments as indicated by the feedback you receive to comply with any requirements.
Correct.
Great. So there is a motion written in here. So I think for the technicalities of this, for anyone that would like to make the motion, I would just request that you read the motion as written, and then we can go through any further discussion. So is anyone who would love to read the motion that's written on page 86 and introduce that motion?
Tracy Pelton. Approve the draft revisions to the New Hampshire 2024-2028 WIOA combined state plan and grant staff the authority to make necessary modifications to ensure full compliance with U.S. Department of Labor guidance, requirements, and identified deficiencies.
Thank you, Tracy. Is there a second?
Sorry, including a second.
Great. Thank you very much. Any discussion on the motion? Wonderful. Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Great. Chair votes aye. Motion passes. Thank you. Godspeed.
I did read the goals and all that. It was really well done. Very well written and very succinct. I loved it. It was great. I only read like 10 pages.
And for the record, Joe Dorian, thank you for that. And we really appreciate the board. We did those virtual sessions, which were really productive. So thank you for those who attended those and provided feedback. Not only there, but also in between those sessions. I know you reached out separately and a few other board members as well. And we will bring an update to the June meeting where, fingers crossed, everything is fine. But also, too, it gives us that opportunity at the June meeting that if there are more deficiencies that go beyond the scope of the motion, we can try to address it there as well. So that's also something I wanted to mention. But we're, fingers crossed, hoping everything goes well and easy.
Very good. So this is Chairman Key Wallace for the record. Before I ask for a motion to adjourn, is there any other business that anyone would like to bring forward to the board?
Just one I failed to mention or to note in the first vote on the prior meeting minutes that I needed to abstain since I also was not at that meeting.
Wonderful. Let the record show Commissioner Labor's abstained from the vote to ratify the minutes from the previous meeting. Thank you, Commissioner. Is there any other business that would like to come before the board? No. Great. So again, for the record, this is Chairman Key Wallace, and this concludes the duly noticed meeting for the State Workforce Innovation Board. This meeting has been recorded and was conducted in a manner compliant with RSA 91A, as always. I would accept a motion to adjourn. Richard, thank you. Moved. Second?
Second.
Great. Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes. We are adjourned. Please end the recording. And for the record, it is 2:33.
Did you ever do radio?
No.
We did it.
Hey, nice
work. We did it.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.